Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month, we have a fabulous interview with Nancy Ann Healy, aka J.A. Armstrong. So two authors for the price of one, even though they are the same person. But you know what I mean. And you'll hear the great interview we had in a few moments. But first, before we get to that, as usual, we're going to have a look at what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what's been happening in the world of lesfic this past month and what's been happening in the world of me. First up, the Amazon charts. And this month sees a few new entries in the US and UK, which is great, as well as some familiar faces joining the party. At number one in the UK lesbian fiction charts on Amazon is Jeanette Winston with her book Gut Symmetries. Now, Gut Symmetries was first released back in 1997, so nearly 20 years ago, which frankly makes me feel very old. I remember reading it back then when it came out, and I was blown away by it because, you know, Jeanette is a fantastic writer. Well, it's back. It's at the top of the charts and it's been repackaged with a shiny new cover. So if you haven't experienced Gut Symmetries, now's your chance. And weirdly, I think it's the first time Jeanette Winston has been in the top five in the nearly 2 years I've been doing this podcast, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. So, yeah, great news for her. Also in the top five is Claire Ashton's new book, Poppy Jenkins, which is frankly spectacular. I read this book recently in preparation for having Claire on the podcast next month, and I can honestly say it's a fantastic book in every way. It's funny, frothy, romantic, and just a brilliant slice of Welsh life. So if you haven't bought it yet and you're in need of some Welshness in your life, then yeah, buy it today. Also pleased to say too that my book Nothing to Lose is still top five in the UK, so thank you very much if you bought it. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'm sure it made you more clever, good looking and brilliant than you already are. And if you bought my book, you're all those three things, obviously. Also doing well still is Becky Chambers' The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, which has been hanging around the top of the charts for quite some time now. So check it out. I really like the cover on that one. And doing well in the UK and the US is Eliza Lenski's The Final Rose. And this is the story of a woman whose mum enters her to go on what I assume to be a version of The Bachelor. Only, so she's in a sort of reality TV show house with 20 other women vying for the attentions of one man. But being it's a lesbian romance, I'm sure you can imagine that she doesn't fall for the bloke. She falls for one of the other contestants. I like the sound of this story very much, so I will put it on my summer reading list for when I go on holiday next week. Hooray! Yeah, I like the sound of it a lot. And it reminds me of Q Kelly's book that I read last year. Can't think of the name. I'll try and find it on the internet while I'm talking to you. And that was about a reality show, but that was like a lesbian version of The Bachelor. So I quite like, that was a good read, and I'd love them to make a lesbian version of The Bachelor. It'd be interesting. I would watch. As it is, there's just a bit too much scheming going on for my liking to watch those kind of things. Anyway, staying in the US, Rachel Maldonado's book Burning Desire is still burning up the charts. See what I did there? Proving once again, as if we needed to know, that lesbian firefighters are a top draw. Note to self, must write book with lesbian firefighter in. Although having said that, my book All I Want for Christmas did have a lesbian firefighter in it, but she was kind of the baddie. She was the one trying to muscle her way into Tori's life. So, yeah, maybe I need to write a happy, positive lesbian firefighter, clearly. And also sitting pretty at the top of the lesbian charts in the US is another former podcast guest, because, of course, Eliza Lenski was a former podcast guest as well. Another former podcast guest sitting at number one is Robin Alexander with her new book, Dear Me. Now, this one catches up with Will They, Won't They couple Alexis and Stacey. There aren't enough Alexises in Lesvic, are there? So let's try and get a few more of those in. Alexis and Stacey brings to mind Dynasty to me, and that's never a bad thing. Lots of big shiny jewels and shoulder pads. Anyway, Alexis and Stacey, one of them is in a relationship, the other one despises the other one. But if I know Robin's books, there'll be a few laughs along the way before they finally get it together for their happy ever after. And also still up there in the charts in the US is Catherine Ryan Hyde's The Language of Hoofbeats. Now, I've told you about this before. I can't tell you enough about it. It's a fabulous family drama with a lesbian couple at its centre. If you haven't read it, do go out and read it. You won't regret it. It's a beautifully told story that stays with you long after you've read it. It's still with me, months after I read it. So I still wonder how so-and-so's doing. I can't remember the names, obviously, because my memory is terrible. Anyway, what else is happening in the world since we last met? Well, dear listener, the Goldie Awards took place this month in Washington, D.C., and it was a riot of readers and authors, and I didn't get along. I'm hoping to go one year, maybe, but it's a bit far for me. It's over in the U.S., but congrats to everyone who got nominated and congrats to those who won. Now, if you want a full list of the winners, you can go to the Golden Crown Literature Society website and there's a full list of winners up there. But I'll just read out a smattering of the key winners and former podcast guests who've won an award. First up, Sandra Moran, who sadly passed away of cancer last year, scooped the Anne Bannon Popular Choice Award for her novel that she just finished before she died, All We Lack. So well deserved on that one. Prizes for Best Debut Author went to Sophia French for The Diplomat, Jean Copeland for The Revelation of Beatrice Darby, and Jeannie Levig for Threads of the Heart. So well done to all three of them. Best Mystery Filler, Best Mystery Thriller, had two former podcast guests scooping awards. So brilliant news for Carrie Hunter for her novel Cold to the Touch and Lee Winter for The Red Files, alongside Anne Aptke for Tarnished Gold. And that's not the first time I've seen Anne Aptke's book come up in nominations and award winners. So one to check out. Fletcher Delancey also scooped a sci-fi award for her book Without a Front, The Warrior's Challenge, which is well deserved. And Best Contemporary Romance included the wonderful Susan X. Maha and her book The Right Time, alongside Julie Blair's Making a Comeback and Annette Morey's For Locked Inside. Congrats to all the winners, as I said, and if you fancy going along, it's like a 3-day convention, jamboree, meet lots of authors, go along to lots of talks. There's drinks, there's karaoke. Next year's convention takes place in Chicago next July. So if you're a reader or writer and fancy meeting up with both, book in your flights now. And on another note, the Rainbow Awards, run by the tireless Eleza Role, is shouting out for submissions. If you have a book and you want to submit it, now is the time. So what have I been up to since we last met? Well, Nothing to Lose was released in June and it's been really well received, which I'm absolutely thrilled about. I really am. This book, even though it's a romance, it deals with a bit of a dark subject. So I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but it's actually been my most successful book launch to date, so I'm really, really thrilled with it. So if you bought it, thank you so much, and I hope you enjoyed it. And I'm really chuffed with how it's going. You know, there's nothing better when you've written a book than people reading it and enjoying it. So I'm really thrilled. As well as releasing that, I've also been busy putting the finishing touches to the next in my All I Want series, All I Want for Summer, which is due out at the end of July. I originally said June for this one, but that was perhaps a little bit optimistic. But July is the release date, and I'm sticking with that. It's going to my proofer this week, so hopefully, all going well, it will be out at the end of July. It might drip into August, but I'm shooting for July. So if you are a fan of the All I Want series, yes, there's another Torian Holly installment. Torian Holly, I'm having trouble with my words today. Coming your way very soon. And if you never want to miss a release from me, sign up for my mailing list at my website, which is www.clairelydon.co.uk, and you get all manner of freebies for your email address. You get a short story, a prologue to London Calling, and bonus chapters for All I Want for Christmas and Nothing to Lose. That is worthwhile, I'd say. Anyway, enough about me. Next up, we have my interview with the fantastic Nancy Ann Healy. Hope you enjoy. Joining me today is US author Nancy Healy, who's released a slew of novels under her own name, including three best-selling series. I'm going to start again. I've buggered up that intro.
That's fine. No worries.
I'm not reading my own writing.
You make me sound good. So that's it's
okay.
All
yeah.
Flate that ego. Go ahead.
Let's go again. So joining me today is US author Nancy Healy, who's released a slew of novels under her own name, along with three best-selling series under her alias J.A. Armstrong. As Nancy Ann, she's best known for her Alex and Cassidy books, including Intersection, Betrayal, Commitment and Conspiracy, while as J.A. Armstrong, she's known for her best-selling series, including By Design, Special Delivery and Off Screen. Nancy lives with her wife Melissa and beloved Pooches. Welcome, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good, very good. What have you been up to today so far? Although it's pretty early there, isn't it, where you are?
It is early here. What have I been up to? Those beloved pooches are outside with my beloved son so that I can actually speak clearly and hear you.
Oh, okay.
So my morning has consisted, as it does most mornings, of dealing with three dogs. Yeah.
Okay. That's my morning. There's three of them. Wow. So, yeah. So well done to your son for keeping them quiet for the next half hour.
That's right.
Yeah. So paint a picture exactly where you are today so that listeners can understand. Like, are you in your office? Whereabouts are you?
Yeah, I actually am in my office, which doubles as a spare room in our house. So it's my workspace. And my office is, people who follow me on Facebook have probably seen pictures of it. It's kind of a little sanctuary of fun for me.
Okay.
It has all things that I just love, pictures of my friends, pictures of my book covers, you know, a little Millennium Falcon Star Wars light, don't tell, you know, some little bobbleheads from X-Files and things of that nature.
Okay, so
yeah, it's my fun little space.
Okay, inspiring things. And have you got, what can you see out the window of your office?
The next door neighbor's house and the neighbor's house across the street.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. If that's not as inspiring.
Right,
just
okay.
So you know.
Yeah. So to get started, tell me a bit about your writing journey and how that got started.
Well, you know, I've always written. I have to say, if you had asked me 3 years ago if I thought I would write a book, any book, I probably would have said no. Mostly what I've written in the past has been dialogue or monologues, you know, plays or monologues for stand-up comedy or I used to do a one-woman show in the 90s, and so I had three characters I did, so that kind of writing. And then I moved away from it being a single mom for a lot of years. I worked in retail, so I hadn't really written particularly anything that would be character voice or be fiction. You know, I went back to school, I studied ministry, and I wrote exegetical papers and research papers and things like that, but different. And I had a play I wanted to write, which I did end up writing, called Spin, based on an experience in my life. And I hadn't written in a long time, and my son said to me, "Why don't you write a fan fiction?" And I laughed at him. I'd never heard of fan fiction other than him.
Right.
And I was talking to a friend of mine who's actually a television writer, and she said, "I read it all the time because I like to see what the fans think about the characters."
Right,
so,
okay, yeah.
So we were watching Xena at the time. My wife had never seen it. I hadn't seen it in 20-something years. And I said, well, maybe I could just try just to write character voice and write it like that. So I did, and it got a big following, and a lot of my readers started asking me to write something original, which I'd never really thought about doing, like I said. So I was like, what if I wrote original characters? What would I want to do? And I have a kind of a penchant for Steve Barry. I don't know if you know who that is, but novels. Vince Flynn, I like political and political, psychological, and espionage thrillers I really like. So I was like, wow, what if I could do that with a lesbian spin?
Yes.
So that's where Alex and Cassidy were born. And that's how I started writing Alex and Cassidy. And then, you know, wrote the play in the midst of that as well. So.
Okay. Cool. So talking of Alex and Cassidy, so you write that under Nancy Ann Healy alias. So, I guess that's your actual name. You started out with those two, and you've ended up with four books. So tell me a bit about that series and what readers can expect from that.
Well, Alex and Cassidy, the main part of the series is actually over. It was planned to be four books from the beginning, actually.
Okay.
Intersection, each title really having to do with what the book is about, intersection being the intersection of all their lives, where they all sort of collide, betrayal, the first, you know, knowledge of the betrayals in their lives, commitment, where they make a commitment to each other, and then the conspiracy that's underlied all of it. And I knew that it would probably take that many books to tell this story, because it's kind of intricate of what was going on and really brought them together, that they couldn't see at the time. And there is a fifth book called The Collaborative that's due out, I would say, probably early next year. And I never like to give a firm date because I never really know. It depends. But that is actually the backstory of their parents. And so it is told by them about 20 years in the future to their grown children. And they are in it, but the featured characters are really their parents, and it really is about the conspiracy coming out of World War II and through the Cold War that led to everything that they went through.
Okay, all right. So fans of Alex and Cassidy can expect more. And interesting that you said that you started off and you knew it was going to be four books. So you went straight into a series, because series are very en vogue at the moment. Everybody's trying to write a series, but you had that straight off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a very intricate political thriller. There's a lot of pieces to it. There was a lot of research that went into it. And so I just didn't think that I could tell the story the way that I wanted to without doing that. And it has a very large cast of characters. You know, while Alex and Cassidy are the protagonists and they're, you know, the featured characters, there's a lot of attention paid to other characters. And I think any reader of that series would say that. There's a lot more elements going on in that. You get to know the supporting cast really as well as you do of Alex and Cassidy in a lot of instances. And so when you're going to tell a story with that many characters that feed into each other, you can't really do that in one novel. I did know.
Okay, cool. And you've got another book out, Falling Through Shooting Stars, which is about one woman who thinks she's content in a marriage but then finds herself falling for someone else. And I was intrigued by this one. So tell me a bit more about that one.
Yeah, that's probably the most special book to me in a lot of ways, personal book to me in a lot of ways. It was very difficult for me to write, but it was a story I really wanted to tell. Some of my Alex and Cassidy readers got partway through the book and sent me messages and said, I can't read this because, you know, they don't stay together, Julia and Carrie. They bring it up and they have three children. And I found that very interesting because I've often wondered, and I've pushed back on some of my readers, that if Julia had been married to Carl and met Katie and realized something was lacking in her relationship with Carl, would they have been as offended by the idea that she felt the need to end that marriage?
Yeah.
And I think there's something to kind of be looked at and discussed there, you know. But I do think that characters reflect life, and books reflect life, just like good film or good television. Fiction reflects people's realities, and reality is that we change and grow. And sometimes someone comes into our life and is a catalyst for us to realize that we might be content and we might have grown used to our life, but we're not really fulfilled the way that we could or want to be. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that turns into a relationship and sometimes it doesn't, but I think often an event or a person is a catalyst for us to realize where we need to go. And that's really what Julia's story is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's people come into your lives, don't they, for different reasons, for different lengths of time. And it's good to reflect that in fiction. And I'm quite surprised, actually, because you say that you're, well, I say I'm surprised, but maybe not so much, that your readers were pushing back on that. Because I think that your readers seem to like that you don't write cookie cutter romances. There is a lot more kind of realism and depth, and your stories generally involve women with a little more baggage, and they often have kids and established lives. So was this intentional from the start with you?
Yes, definitely. And a lot of it has to do, you know, with not being able to find the models that maybe I wanted to read as readily out there, or see as readily in film and television and things that I want to interact with as a reader, as a viewer. You know, as a mom, you know, who was a single mom, and, you know, I've been with my wife now for 12 years, but she came into my life when Chris was 13. That's the reality of a lot of people, and I think that needs to be reflected more. Mm-hmm. And so I did want to write that. And I also, I just like looking at characters who, over time, who do have, exploring what their baggage is. I think, again, that comes from a theater background in things, is really being able to get in their heads and see who they are. And so how they interact with other characters, how other people affect them as human beings. So it is deliberate. It's what I like to write. Mm-hmm. It's what interests me to write, you know?
Yeah. And you were saying there about, obviously, that your wife came into the picture when Chris was 12. So, but it was Chris that got you started on this whole writing journey, right, with the fanfic. Yeah. So is he a fan of what's become?
You know, I don't know how much of everything I've written he's read. He might be afraid to. He's 26 now. He's probably like, I really don't want to know anything about my mother's lesbian life. I know enough already. He is an avid reader, but he reads a lot of fantasy.
Yeah.
And science fiction, fantasy, that kind of thing. Those are the genres he really enjoys. Not so much political thrillers or romances.
All right. So you've got to write some lesbians on spaceships then, right?
I do. Actually, I'm working on a short story series. I've been working on it for a year, but on and off, called Evolution, that is kind of a fantasy sci-fi piece.
Okay.
But it's sometimes when I get doing things, it goes in three different directions, and then I have to pull it together before I can actually make it come together, you know?
Yeah. So we were talking about Nancy Healy, but then when did the idea of writing as J.A. Armstrong come about?
J.A. Armstrong has an interesting birth. J.A. Armstrong came about because I got a really bad review/feedback from a reader for Falling Through Shooting Stars. And I got some, and I have, and a lot of my readers will tell you this, some pretty pointed feedback that I didn't write enough sex. And I was mad, to be quite honest. And I said to my wife, I can write sex. I just don't tend to write. I mean, I write love scenes, but they're not very graphic.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really want to write that under my own name, partly because under my own name, I don't want to lock myself into saying I will always write lesbian fiction. There are characters I've written in Alex and Cassidy, for instance. I have a character that's a straight male character that I've thought about writing a novel with him. Mm-hmm. And so I really don't want to be pigeonholed. J.A. Armstrong is a little different. J.A. Armstrong will always be lesbian fiction. And so I felt that was a good reason to go and use an alias.
Okay.
And I like the idea of telling stories in shorter episodic form, almost like you would watch a television series, almost like you would watch an episode and tell them over a longer period of time. And so really all three of those series were born that afternoon in my mind, the characters and what I was going to do basically with them.
That's a busy afternoon.
It was.
Yeah.
And then I started writing Addie and Emma that night and I think they released about 3 weeks later. So,
okay. So, and you bring them out pretty, they're pretty machine gun like, you know, so boom, 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 boom. So, do these like just flow off the keyboard for you?
Sometimes. And like right now, not as much. I've been struggling with this latest one. Sometimes I hit a pad, now that I've been writing them a while, where a story is like a bridge. And that's what happened with the last By Design story, and that's what's happening now, where I can't really tell it in a short story, mm-hmm. because it's almost like a bridge to get to the next part of what this couple is going through. It's almost like if you were writing television, I guess, and you had, you know, you started the season with a 2-hour episode instead of a 1-hour episode, because you need that bridge to tell the story. And that's sort of where I'm at. But normally they come off pretty quickly because I have an idea where they're going.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. So each of these series follows a particular couple. And are they all ongoing, or do they have a finite point?
Right now, they're all ongoing. The first one off-screen has been on hiatus for a little bit. That will be back at the end of this month. But yeah, they're all ongoing. As long as I can hear them in my head and people want to read them, mm-hmm. Then I'll keep writing them.
Okay.
And then when they stop being in my head, and or people are tired of them, then I won't write them anymore. So move on to something else.
It sounds good. It sounds good. And I wouldn't like to be inside your head. There's a lot of voices going on, right?
There are.
Yeah. And have you got any top tips for writing a series? Because, you know, it's a lot to juggle three at once.
Tips for writing a series?
Yeah.
I said, you know, I think it's like anything else. I think there are people who would really enjoy writing a series and people who would not. Just like there are people who enjoy reading it and people who do not. Mm-hmm. I think what I have to say is if you're going to write a series, it's going to be more character-driven even than plot-driven. You're going to throw characters into things to see what happens to them. And you're going to need more characters to make that survive over 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 or however many books you're going to do. My series are very different than, say, like a James Patterson series or even a Steve Barry series, where you have one protagonist, or Dan Brown. They write the same protagonist, and they, you know, they put them in one situation, and there's different characters around them. That's not how I write. Mine are more, I would say, like a television show, where you have different characters that come and go, but you have a core cast of characters always around them, and you're really following their life through different circumstances as they go. So it depends on what you like to write. Mm-hmm. But you have to think about that. You have to really think about where you want to take. For me, it's where do I want to take the characters?
Yeah.
How do I want to see them grow? And that's what I would say. More than I want to write this particular story, if okay. that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And having read your Healy and Armstrong books, both of them, the key thing that jumped out at me was the dialogue. It's very good. It's very realistic. I love writing dialogue, and I'm assuming that it's the same for you. So do you find that easy to do? Do you act out the scenes in your head?
It's very easy for me to do. But again, I think a lot of that comes from having a theater background and having done improvisational comedy and things like that, where you're given a cue and you're basically taking on a character. Mm-hmm. So I think some of that is that. And some of it is, again, how I like to tell stories and the stories I like to tell, which are, again, very character driven, and they're told through relationships. I think my stories more. I write far more dialogue than prose, and that's because I like to explore who these people are when they're with other people, rather than explain what's in their surroundings. It's not how I write.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it comes very naturally to me
okay.
to write dialogue. Yeah.
Cool. So, describe to me your writing process these days. Do you write every day, and is there a particular place or time that you write better in?
I do write every day. I might not always be writing on a book. I might be writing on a blog. I might be journaling. But I do write for some amount of time every day. I actually write best at night, late at night, believe it or not, because
okay.
it's quiet. Like right now, hopefully you can't hear it too much, there's somebody doing yard work down the street, you know. So there is distractions for me during the day with the dogs and things like that. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes to bed in this house. The dogs are asleep. I'm able to sit at my desk and, you know, listen to some music and just kind of escape to write.
Yeah.
So probably my most productive time is late at night, to be honest.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I mean, a lot of people do sort of say get up in the morning and do it, but I mean, it changes all the time for me. Sometimes I do write at like sort of 1-2 in the morning, and it, like you say, it's quiet, so you get stuff done.
Yep.
And do you have a word count you like to hit?
It depends on whether or not I'm on a self-imposed deadline. If I am, then I do, but I don't really like to write that way.
Mm-hmm.
I like to write as it comes and let it come.
Yeah.
Because for me, writing is, you know, it is how I make my living now, but it's also I do it because I love it and it's joyful. And if it becomes not joyful, then I don't want to do it. And if I'm stressed and I stress myself out, I find I can't hear the characters or feel the story the same way. So I try very hard not to press myself in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Some days I have incredibly productive days. And some days, not so much. I think the most words I ever wrote in a day was about 19,000. And that was when I was writing Conspiracy, and it was like a 14-hour day. And I literally, I think other than to go to the bathroom and get a coffee, I didn't leave the keyboard.
Wow. I mean, I didn't respond then because my jaw hit the floor. So, you know, that was why there was no response.
Yeah, it just was. And I didn't use everything I wrote that day, by the way. But it just was going, and when it's like that, I just close off and I'm just gone.
Yeah.
An average day for me, probably, honestly, is between 4,000 and 6,000 words, probably.
Okay, yeah, 19,000 there you go. There's a target for me to try and hit in future. And do you ever sort of get to the end of a book and think, what am I going to write next, or have you got so many projects ongoing that never happens?
No, I don't ever hit the end of the book and think what next, because I kind of always know what I'm going to move on to next, or I have so many things I want to move on to. But I will, I do always have a little bit of self-doubt every time I put out a new book, I think. You know, because I have people who follow these stories going, the truth is I don't ever want to disappoint anyone, and the fact of the matter is you're always going to disappoint someone down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to learn to breathe through that, because that can trip me up when I go to start writing the next series or the next book. And I usually have to take a breath, because those characters are in my head and I have to kind of let them run their course and get out of my head to get into the next piece that I'm going to write, whether it's somebody I've written before or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as you were saying, previous to writing the books, you've written plays. Is it one play or a couple of plays?
Well, I've written characters. I used to do a one-woman show that had three characters in it. Lily, Maggie, and Harley. And so, small plays, one-act plays and things like that in the past. I used to run a community theater with my best friend.
Okay.
So I did a lot of different things there. I did more directing than I did writing back then.
Okay.
And then I did write a full-length play that was actually on a podcast show that I really want to do live this coming year, called Spin, which is really about a woman who's shot and killed, and she has a baby at the time, and over time, the shooter's son and her daughter end up living in the same town, and they don't know who the other is. And become best friends, and the way that that affects all their families. And when the woman dies, she sort of spins to the man who shot her in prison, and to her family, and to his family. And so you see how people are not that far apart from each other.
Right.
You know,
okay.
And how it comes together. So, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds really interesting. And and very sort of on the zeitgeist with all the gun control stuff going on in America right now.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you think sort of these other types of writing have influenced writing your novels and your series?
Writing dialogue and writing plays and things?
Yeah, writing plays and being a stand-up comedian. Do you think that's sort of fed into your new career?
Absolutely. Well, you know, creating is creating no matter what you're creating. You're drawing from your own emotions and your own experiences and your own observations. So comedy, doing comedy, whether you're doing stand-up or whether you're doing improvisational comedy, a lot of what you learn to do is observe. And I think that that's true in writing, too. You know, mm-hmm. observing people, observing the world around you so that you can describe it, listening to the way different people speak. If you're going to create a character and play it on stage, you know, and it's an Irish barmaid, you have to figure out how that Irish barmaid would speak.
Yeah.
You know, because they wouldn't speak like you. Or, you know, whether it's a barista or whether it's a doctor or whether it's a senator, how would they speak versus myself or, you know, an auto mechanic who's a guy, you know? And a lot of it is observation. You learn to do that in theater, and so that you can immerse yourself in characters or write them. And I think that's benefited me a great deal, particularly writing dialogue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Cool. And I see as well that you're also a lover of karaoke, which would follow on from your theatrical stand-up background. So do you have a karaoke track? If we all went out for a drink with you tonight, what song would you sing?
I Touch Myself.
Oh, good. That's a good one.
I almost always sing that. And I try to find the most innocent, quiet person in the bar and embarrass them if I can. It's kind of a mission.
That's the stand-up comic in you coming out, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Have you got a dance routine to go along with it as well?
No.
Oh, you should.
I always look for backup dancers. So if I'm singing and somebody wants to stand behind me and dance, no one ever needs to see me dance. I don't need to write any kind of dialogue at all. I don't need to write a story to be funny. Just let me dance and you'll all be on the floor. So that's not an issue. No.
Okay. No. And you recently came to London and Paris on your travels. I'm your friend on Facebook, so I feel like I was on that trip with you. So did you have a good time in Europe? And what was your favorite part of London?
I did. The best part of our London trip was that our friend Clive came down from Scotland and spent 2 days with us. So that was great. We did the Globe and saw the Taming of the Shrew with him. And we did the London Eye with him and went to Buckingham Palace with him. And so we had a great time with him. I loved London. Paris was all right. Of course, we were there when it was flooded.
Right.
We were supposed to stay on a houseboat and couldn't. Because it was flooded and had to change where we were going to stay. And then the Seine was probably, most of the bridges probably had between 5 and 10 feet of clearance. It was really bad.
Yeah.
So a lot of things were closed when we were there, which forced us to do other things. And I think it put a lot of people in, like, to be honest with you, not a kind of a foul mood, even people that lived there. Because things were closed, but parts of the metro were closed, RERC was closed. So
yeah.
It was a little bit of a weird trip, to be honest with you. I loved London. I would love to go live in London and write a book for 3 or 6 months. I really would.
Okay. Well,
there isn't anything I didn't like about it, to be honest with you, while I was there.
That's the right answer. Well done, Nancy. and if you come back for 3 or 6 months, let me know and we shall go and hit up a karaoke bar. Unfortunately, there used to be a karaoke, a lesbian bar in London called Blush, and it used to have karaoke every Friday and I was a regular there. But unfortunately, it closed about 6 months ago, as a lot of lesbian bars are doing, so I can't take you there, but never mind. That was just a little aside for all the London listeners.
That would have been perfect.
I know, right?
And I could have made people blush. I could have given it its name. There you go.
And talking of, as I said, I followed you on Facebook around your trip. And you are quite prolific on social media and on Facebook in particular. So is that a big sort of part of reaching your readers?
Yeah, I would say so. I think social media is a reality for anybody who wants to reach their readers. But, you know, I mean, I also have friends that live all over the world. And frankly, it's a connection point,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's kind of how I see Facebook. Is it really important to me? I wish it was go back a little more to the people aspect. I think they're trying to do that now. It's just been a little bit too much of, I don't know, negativity for me in the last few months in particular. But I enjoy it because I get to interact with people that I otherwise wouldn't get to interact with. So,
Cool.
Plus, I'm a people person. I'm very social. And one thing about writing that's hard for me is that it's a very solitary exercise. And and that's probably why you actually, I'll be very honest, see me on social media more, because I kind of am fed by people. And when you're just sitting in an office writing all day or hiking with your dogs, you're not coming in contact with people as much. And that kind of gets me crazed at points. My wife would tell you that. So it's an outlet for me as well.
Okay. Yeah. No, I get that. I get that. I think a lot of writers would understand that. Although, would you say you're more an extrovert with your sort of stand-up background and all that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. I think I'm more of an extrovert. I think I'm very introspective.
Yeah.
But I'm extroverted.
Yeah.
Definitely. Without question.
Yeah. I think I'm an introvert with extrovert tendencies, mainly when you give me a microphone and you know, say sing. I'm very good at that.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's great.
And are you an avid reader of lesfic yourself?
You know, I do like to read lesfic. I wish I had more time right now to actually read. Mm-hmm. And I like to read a lot of other things. The truth of the matter is, historically speaking in my life, I read a lot more nonfiction than I do fiction. I read a lot of philosophy books. I read a lot of history books. I read a lot of biographies. I find truth stranger than fiction, which mm-hmm. it is, because it's not held to the same barometer as fiction. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoy reading about real people's lives even more than I do reading fiction. And I, like I said, I have a real strong love of things like Steve Barry and Dan Brown. And when I was a kid, I loved John Jakes, who wrote American historical novels. So starting back in the Revolutionary War all the way, you know, mm-hmm. through the Civil War. And I was addicted to those. And things like the Thornbirds, things that have a real trinity, have a real political or historical or social background to them.
Okay.
So, yeah, I do like to read lesfic, but I have to be honest and say a lot. I try to read my friends' books mm-hmm. when they come out.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to, if I have time, I tend to read those authors that I don't have time to read, if that makes sense, that I really love. It's not that I don't like it. I never read it until I started writing it. That's the truth.
Yeah. No, that makes complete sense. And I kind of get that, because, you know, if you're writing it all day, it's quite kind of nice to read something different, a bit different at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I'm with you on that one. When can we expect the next title from you, and what will that be?
The next piece is Late Arrivals, which is late. It's a late arrival, appropriately named. It will be out, I was hoping, next week, but it'll probably be the week after, because it's in some edits right now. And that's actually the newest installment of the special delivery series with Brooke and Tess. And it will be longer. Rewriting a couple things and doing the end right now. So it's probably going to, I would bet, when all is shaped up, be around 60,000 words instead of around 25 or 30. So that's part of the reason it's taken longer. That's next. And then I'm actually have been working on The Side, which has put me behind on The Collaborative, which is that Alex and Cassidy book. So that could be sooner than I thought, depending on how it flows. If I write 19,000 words in a day, it could be sooner than
I
thought. I wouldn't bet on that, though.
So a couple of weeks, that'll be kind of mid-July then.
Yeah.
For people who are listening to this, yeah. And if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose?
Oh, geez, you know, I've been thinking about that. Okay, well, it would be a toss, I think. I would say Shakespeare and either Fanny Flagg or Carrie Fisher.
Okay.
Either one. And I know that probably sounds like a really bizarre pairing, but it really has to do with dry wit.
Yep.
And social connotation to what they write. That's really what it has to do with. But I think so, yeah.
No, I like that. I like that. Shakespeare and Fanny Flagg. I'd go for that one. And maybe we can have a collaborative effort put on at the Globe any minute now.
Oh, my gosh. It would be like, you know, fried green tomatoes meets The Taming of the Shrew. Or, yeah, could be interesting.
Fried green tomatoes with swords. There you go.
Yeah, that's exactly. That could be interesting. Annie yeah. Flagg might go for that. She's got a good sense of humor.
She might, yeah. So where can people find out more about you?
Well, they can go to the website, which is www.thebumblingbard.com. And pretty much everything is on there. There's links to the J.A. Armstrong website and the Alex and Cassidy website. The blog is on there. The trailers are on there. Upcoming appearances are on there. When you put this out, that'll be on. Everything's on there. Okay. So cool. That's probably the best place to go.
Excellent. All right. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much, Nancy, for taking the time.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was great to talk to you.
Great.
That's the end of this lesbian book club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, Nothing to Lose, The Long Weekend, The London series, or The All I Want series, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, and I love a new follower, so come on down and follow me there. I'm also on Facebook, Claire Lydon Author, and Instagram at ClaireFic. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It is much appreciated. Make sure you tune in to the Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip. And join me next time for some more hot book club action in August, where I will be chatting to none other than fellow Brit Claire Ashton. See you then.